Hello, and welcome to the My Control Room podcast, the only podcast that features discussion, commentary, and tips regarding control room ergonomics, alarm management, human interface, and much more. This episode is part one of two. UCDS President Ian Nimmo will be discussing the importance of gap analysis in the control room.
Hello, this is Ian Nimmo, President of User Centered Design Services. We're a human factors company that's focused in the manufacturing industry around petrochemicals, refining, oil refining, offshore, power plants, pulp and paper plants, and a whole range of other manufacturing plants. And we focus on control room design and everything in the control room, from alarm management, HMI design, operator workload studies, and finally, dealing with operator fatigue. Today we're going to be talking about control room gap analysis. Many control rooms have existed, some for over 50 years, and they've just evolved with technology. They've changed from pneumatic instruments to electronic instruments to PC data input to distributed control systems, and the buildings haven't changed much. And people have just adopted new technologies in these existing buildings. And we often get called in to do a gap analysis between what people have today and the best practices that's been defined by the industry, and in particular by the international standard, which is ISO 11064, which is in seven parts. And it's an ergonomic standard for the design of control rooms. Within it, it contains the best practices for control room design. And so we often get asked to do a gap analysis between where people are at today and try to highlight what are the most important things that need to be changed about the control room. And a very important question is, should that control room be modified or should it be abandoned and start again? So often the first question that comes up is the location of the control room. And in the past, control rooms were built right where the action is. And after many accidents and changes in regulations, today control rooms have been moved away from the harmful environment, explosive environments, and more towards the administration buildings. And we often get faced with the question, should we harden our control room and make it blast resistant, which is possible, but it's very, very expensive. Or should we just move the control room? And if we do move it, where should we move it to? And to complicate that question is sometimes there's more than one control room. We actually worked on a site recently with 18 different control rooms. And to move each of the 18 or harden each of the 18 would be really cost prohibited. And so we came up with a solution to do a centralized control room near the administration building. So location is one of the primary questions that we get asked. What are the advantages and disadvantages of having the control room close to the work area? There obviously are a lot of advantages. And one of the main ones, of course, is that the control room operator is closer to hear sounds, closer to the people that's working in the field environment. And there's some disadvantages as well. And that the operator gets distractions from both the field operators and from maintenance people. Whereas when we move into an administration area, the operators get to focus on dealing with problems and without any disturbance. So after location, the next thing that comes up is the consoles, the console adjacency, room adjacencies. And we start doing our gap analysis based on those human factor guidelines from the ISO 11064 document. We'll look at things like lighting levels, and many control rooms today are obviously too dark. Sometimes we see operators sitting in pitch darkness with screens blaring at them. And if we go to the international standard, it tells us that we should have a control room lit to around about 500 lux, which is a very bright room, normally a little bit brighter than a conference room, for example. And the main reason for having that lighting level is to help the operators adjust their circadian clocks and to trick them into it. They're working in a daylight environment when doing 24/7 shift work. So control room lighting is a topic that we have to address. We have to look at task lighting in control rooms for reading information, and we have to look at the normal levels in the control room as designed by the lighting design. A lot of control rooms originally were designed to these lighting levels, but over years operators take the lamps out of the fittings just to make the rooms darker, or if there's any control over the lighting, they will actually switch them right down to a minimum level. Today we've done many changes to the HMI design to allow light background so that we don't get glare on screens as we increase the lighting levels in the control rooms. But it's not just a simple case of changing a few lights out. Often it's about the glare on surfaces, so making sure surfaces have got anti-glare. It's making sure screen angles are right so they don't pick up glare from or reflection from light fittings. And we've got to make sure that we are very careful on how we use windows, if we use windows at all. So again, there's a lot of things that we have to think about as we think about lighting in control room. Then we move to the environmental aspects of the control room, the temperature, the humidity, looking at things like vibration. And we focus on getting the environment that supports people doing 24/7 shift work, and the ones that will actually help with fatigue as well. So we do a lot of work in that particular area. As we look at other aspects of the control room, many control rooms today are trying to take advantage of large screen displays. And again, 60-inch screen displays, 100-inch screen displays are fairly common in control rooms today. And unfortunately, the viewing angles that people mount these things is not often optimum. In fact, a lot of them cause repetitive stress injuries. So when we're doing the gap analysis, we try to identify those issues and make suggestions on how they can redesign those large screen displays so that they can provide a good overview to the operator, one that's easy to see and one they don't have to bend their necks to look at it. It's a great idea to have what they call an off workstation, a large screen display, so that the operator can look at that every 20 minutes for about 20 seconds, which is actually a fatigue practice bring a countermeasure to fatigue. So again, some useful tips on using large screen displays. And if you want to use large screen displays on a wall, you need often higher ceilings than 9-foot ceilings, which is pretty common for a control room, 9-foot ceiling. Today we're building control rooms with 18 and 20-foot ceilings, just so we get that extra height so that we can actually take advantage of large screen displays in the control room. Another part of looking at the gap analysis of a control room is again to look at how efficient the control room is that allows the operators to do the different tasks they have to do. And again, when we talk about some of the things task-wise an operator does, the first thing they do at the beginning of shift is a shift handover. How's that shift handover managed? How many people are in the control room at the time of the shift handover? And what's the quality of the shift handover that's been done? And is it being done without disturbances to other people who may be dealing with problems? After the shift handover, there's normally a morning meeting. And that morning meeting can involve engineers, managers, supervisors. And again, we want to do it with the minimum distraction, but also with the ability for people to hear what's going on and get feedback into what the day's activities are going to be. As the day rolls on, normal activity is dealing with maintenance, so that means often switching different pieces of equipment on and off, tracking work that's going on, and the operator's sitting doing their controlled job and dealing with any abnormal situations that come up. But they also may be training somebody. And so we now have a training environment, and we have to figure out how do we allow somebody else to come in and have keyboard access at the desktop, so that they can track what they're doing in the training and share responsibilities with the operator that's there. And that's one of the quickest ways they learn, is to actually get hands-on experience. So after training, we come round again to normally an afternoon would be again trying to optimize control, making the production plan. And during all these different aspects, the control room changes, and it changes at meal times. Operators don't normally have the ability to go off into a kitchen and eat a meal. They normally go into the kitchen, make the meal, and then bring the meal back and sit at their control desks to do that, so that the control system's never left unmanned for a long period. And they will actually eat at the desk. So again, we have to consider enough space for them to eat, enough space for them to get books out and do updated training. And so again, managing space is one of the important aspects that we look at when we're doing gap analysis.
Thank you again for listening to the My Control Room podcast. Once again, this was part one of a two-part series regarding gap analysis in the control room. Look for part two on our next episode. If you would like more information about user-centered design services, please visit mycontrolroom.com.